Emily White, Dreams as a Guide to Wholeness. Good morning.
And, good morning.
I'm glad that you're all here, even though it's such a beautiful hiking day, but I'll do the best to amuse you here and compensate for the being indoors. Most of you look like you're new here and haven't heard my talk before, so I'll just give a brief introduction to Carl Jung, who is the person who wrote the book Man and His Symbols, which is in the bookstore. And I'll give a short summary of the book and then talk about dreams and their importance for as guides towards wholeness. Now, who was Carl Jung? His name is Jung and not Jung. And he was a Swiss psychiatrist who lived from 1875 to 1961 and wrote 20 volumes on his psychological theory. He was a follower of Freud, but broke with Freud because Freud's concepts were too narrow, too specifically sexual, and Jung was more interested in mythology and saw the unconscious as the repository of archetypes that are the same symbols that you see in fairy tales and in mythology. He just broadened the concept greatly. He wrote in a Germanic style that is hard to read, so that this book, Man and His Symbols, which is in the bookstore in paperback, or the same book in hardcover, is his easy to read or easy to follow book, which he finished about 10 days before his death. And I always like to tell the anecdote of how he wrote it, because that shows the importance of dreams. He was approached by John Freeman from the BBC to write the book, and he was old, after all, at 84, you don't sit down to write a book. And he said, I've done everything, I don't think I want to do it. A few days later, he had this dream. And in the dream, he was standing on the platform lecturing, and when he looked down, he saw that all these people he was talking to were blue-collar people. And at the end, they clapped, and they understood what he said. And he said, well, maybe I've only been talking to intellectuals. Maybe I need to write this popular book. So he called John Freeman and said, yes, I will do it. And he worked on it assiduously and carefully and thoroughly, as he did everything, and finished it like 10 days before he died. The first chapter in the book is called Approaching the Unconscious, and that's written by Jung himself. The second chapter is Ancient Myths and Modern Man, or Modern People, by Joseph Henderson, who is his collaborator, and I met him. He's a very learned and very witty man. The third chapter is The Process of Individuation, which I will be talking about, by Marie-Louise von Franz. And I think she's still alive, up in her 90s. She was analyzed by Jung. Jung had the ability to draw a lot of women among his followers, and he respected women, and I think his attitude, which I will also talk about later, helped bring about this new consciousness that we have about women. The fourth chapter is Symbolism in the Visual Arts, by Aniela Jaffe, another woman follower of his. And the fifth chapter is Symbols in an Individual Analysis, by Yolanda Jacoby. What she says in the fifth chapter, and I want to underline, is that there is no such thing as a typical Jungian analysis, though by and large they are similar. This is just as an example, just as there are no Jungians. Jung didn't like disciples. We have as many views about Jung as there are people just about, because he stressed individuation. And individuation means, or really is part of the process here of wholeness, a process of individuation and differentiation. The word speaks for itself. It means becoming more individuated, becoming more yourself, coming more in contact with your inner self, which holds the treasure, or is the treasure, accepting those sides of you that are not so good, like the shadow, which I will talk about and have talked about, and using your gifts, and that's why I have Mary Schramm's book up there, to the fullest. We are all gifted. We all have gifts. But many of us bury these gifts and don't use them, and then we're kind of uneasy or anxious. When we use our gifts to the fullest, we are truly joyful. And in the beginning of the book, Mary asks, or in the beginning of her session, she always asks, are you gifted? And maybe two people will raise their hands. Those who, like Gabe, have a real musical gift, sitting back there writing music. It's okay. Who have a real special gift, whereas most of us have the gifts that are not so clearly defined. Many of us have several lesser gifts that we use more or less. And I think one of the ways of becoming whole is to really use your gifts to the fullest. And serving, whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be something extraordinary. And when you do this, you feel comfortable with yourself, you're happy. You don't feel like you just have to do this. You do it because you love to do it. And if you're lucky enough to get paid for that which you love to do, well, then you really got it made. And I think here at Holden, one reason people are so happy is that most people do that which they like to do, and even if you're on dish team, it's so fun, so it's not so terrible. Well, that's a slight digression. So why are dreams important? Jung was, like Freud, opening up this whole realm of the unconscious, which cannot be known directly. If you look inside yourself, you can understand some things, but you can't get in touch with the unconscious except through dreams. They're like a mirror, like an X-ray. So if you go to the doctor and you say, I fell and twisted my leg, he won't know if it's broken unless he gives you an X-ray. So similarly, when you come to your therapist and you present a problem, it may only be one half of the problem. And the dream will show the other side of it. The dream is usually the opposite of the conscious life. In fact, that's something to keep in mind, that if you have horrible dreams when you're up here at Holden, it's precisely because you're consciously so happy and you're so free of responsibility that you can let some of these ugly things come up. Many people come up here and when they start dreaming, they say, oh, that's such a horrible dream and here I'm in this paradise. But that's precisely because you're in a really fine situation, I assume, right? On the other side of it, and the reason that I put so much importance on dreams, or Jung put so much importance on dreams, is that they contain warnings and they contain wisdom. And in the book by Morton Kelsey, that's on the board, that's unfortunately out of print, sold out at the bookstore, not out of print. I can take orders if you wish to order it. Morton Kelsey is a Christian, Episcopal priest, and he's a Jung follower of Jung, and a writer and a poet. I've met him. He's a very dynamic person. His little book says it all. If you read that book, you don't have to come to these sessions. He really does cover all the points. He points out why dreams are important, why dreams were so important in the Bible, and there is no reason that God is not speaking to us through dreams even today. That's why we need to listen. But 80% of your dreams are probably just reprocessing what you have done during the day. Most of your dreams are not the great big dream that you will remember and that will guide your life. However, every dream, if analyzed fully, has some wisdom in it. And on Friday or Saturday, I'll be talking about how to analyze a dream. And those of you who are still here, I would urge you to remember your dreams so you can bring them in and we'll share them and we'll try to analyze them. How do we remember dreams? Do most of you remember your dreams?
Some.
Right. Do I need to go through why, or how we remember them? Okay, well, important to feel that it is important to remember them and to say to yourself, I'll try to remember them before you go to sleep. And to not open your eyes instantly when you wake up, but to stay asleep, or not asleep, stay with your eyes closed and let the images rise. Because everybody dreams 3 and 4 times a night. But you don't remember more than 1 or 2 dreams. just let the images rise and have a little pad and write down as much as you wish. You don't have to write down the whole detail. And then that's it. Then you can think about it later. You don't have to sit down and spend hours analyzing. It really takes like 3 minutes. But you have to give yourself that time when you first wake up to keep your eyes closed and to think back rather than forward. Now let's see, today I have to be on this team and I have to give a session. That won't do it, you see. The moment you think forward, it wipes it out. It's not like the eraser on the board. You know, thinking forward will erase the dream. And before I go into the psychological meanings of dreams, I want to say why it is important that we dream, whether we remember them or not, and that it somehow processes everything that we have experienced during the day. And if we're deprived of sleep, of dream sleep, when our eye movements are consistently for a long period of time, we can become totally disoriented, even psychotic. So when people are in a hospital and they're awakened with all the best intentions for blood pressure and medication, they often get very disoriented because they're losing so much sleep. Young mothers who have to get up with a baby often get very disoriented. So one of the best things a young father can do is to take that baby for a night or two and let the mother sleep. I was looking at you.
I know.
Okay. Okay. Now to the psychological meaning of dreams. They are important, as I said, because they are a way of knowing what's happening in the unconscious. Well, why is it important to know what's happening in the unconscious? Because, as I said, it contains wisdom and warnings. And certain things will show you that you're having a lot of anxiety or that you need to reorient your life, or specific messages even. And I shared with another group of how my priest came into the kitchen in one of my dreams and took my hand and guided it and said, work with love and thanksgiving. Without anger is not enough. And I had worked in the kitchen with immense anxiety and tremendous anger. Because why should I, intellectual, have to work in the kitchen, you see? So he got right at the core of what my difficulty was, and it took me a long time to assimilate this, and I think I have now. But so that's an example of a direct message that a wise old man, my priest I consider a wise old man, though he's not that old, tells you. And each of you has someone who is a wise old man, your teacher, your doctor, your priest, your minister, or wise old woman. There's also the great mother, the great father, and often Christ himself who appears in dreams. And when you have a big dream, there's usually a lot of light and a lot of awe, a feeling of awe. You wake up and say, I had a really strange dream. Because time has no meaning, it's timeless, and the sequence is not important. So you have to learn to listen to the dream and understand it, and it has to mean something for you personally and not something that we have fished out of a book, because Freud said every cave is a womb and every tower is a phallus. That's a fallacy, pardon the pun. See, I wish my husband were here. He makes puns, you know. Any questions so far? Or any?
How can you tell how much is conscious feed in, though?
In what sense? How can you tell what is conscious feed in?
Yeah, from the day before and what?
Well, as I said, most dreams are a reworking of the day before. I think if you just look at the dream, it sort of shows itself. If it seems to be sort of mundane, and I'll give you an example. The first dream I had at Holden was a friend of mine coming up here and asking a lot of questions and then saying, what can I do? And somebody said, how about dish team? You know, now, I don't think that was a big dream. I think it was just a sort of processing of the fact that I suddenly realized I was on dish team 8, you know. On the other hand, there are dreams I've had which are definitely from a much deeper level. I think you will get to know that as you look at your own dreams.
Making life decisions, you need to know them.
Well, you don't.
A replay.
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
To see how much is a replay in your life when you're making decisions for the future.
Yeah. Well, I think when you make decisions for the future, you don't just base it on dreams alone. The dreams are more of a guideline. My priest used this beautiful image. They're sort of like when you look in the rearview mirror, you check to see that there isn't anybody in the back before you make a left turn. But if you drove only looking in the rearview mirror, where would you be? In the ditch. So use the rearview mirror or the introspection wisely.
Why does one dream of things that you never in the world would think of, or something totally alien from yourself?
Because the unconscious is non-rational and ego-alien. You've just given me a feed-in for a good term, ego-alien. The ego is the conscious part, the same term that Freud used, and the unconscious is that which is not ego or ego-alien, you see? And so all dreams are quite non-rational, have nothing to do with your conscious life. The less they have to do with your conscious life, the more valuable they are, paradoxically.
How are they valuable?
Well, that's what my whole talk is about. Okay, any other questions?
How long does a dream that would last over a period of some time, a half an hour or so, does that only take a few minutes or a few seconds to...
Yeah. That's a fascinating thing. Sometimes you say your alarm goes off and you feed that into your dream and you build a whole story. A whole story is built around. You are dreamed. You don't do it. A whole story is built around that ringing. I had a lot of musical dreams, Gabe, where I was waking to music and then I was hearing music in my dream and the whole thing about the variations on the theme by Haydn. And all that, and it was just a few seconds in my dream, you know. But it seemed like it was a long period.
So yeah? Most dreams...
Excuse me.
Is there any significance to repeated dreams, a dream that you may have several nights?
Yes, I think those are the dreams you should pay attention to because the unconscious is throwing up something that you should be listening to. And the interesting thing is that once you assimilate it and are aware or become conscious or process it in your conscious mind, that series of dreams will stop. You see, that's the whole thing. They are guides. That's exactly what we're talking about. And some of the repeated dreams are often very unpleasant. I don't know whether in your case. But they may say that you're anxious or that you need to turn around or you're worried about something that needs to be worked through and faced or confronted. Yes, you had a question.
Most dreams are just real short then? Generally the time you spend dreaming is a real short period of time?
Well, I forget the figures. Does anybody know there are periods of dreams of dreaming that have been shown in the lab when your eyes move? And the first period is about 5 or 10 minutes, and the second one is about 5 or 10 minutes. There's about 4 or 5 times that you dream. Not never more than 10 minutes, I don't think. And
so the REM period is never more than about 10 minutes.
I don't remember for sure. Don't quote me on this. But there, you know, definite times. And in the lab, they wake people up and have them, and they always dream when their eyes are moving. They always report a dream. Now, don't do like a friend of mine did. I was very enthusiastic about dreams. I said, keep track of them. They're so important and all this. So he woke himself up after every dream. He said, I'm losing sleep. I can't do it. It's enough to remember the first dream in the morning or whatever dream you remember. You know, you don't have to wake yourself up in the middle of the night. In fact, I think most of the dreams I've remembered and I've kept track over 20 years is in the morning. Or after a nap in the afternoon, some fantastic dreams.
Where does the term nightmare come from?
Yeah.
Is that generally known? Is that...
Yeah. A nightmare is often so frightening that it wakes you up. And nightmares sometimes are due to some physiological things, like the proverbial eating of too much food or lying, especially if you're lying with your legs this way and they fall asleep and you're dreaming that the train is coming and you can't get up and run. You know, this is just kind of universal. Or that you're falling. Those are sort of universal anxiety dreams. We're more interested in the less dramatic and deeper dreams.
Are you saying then that nightmares, for the most part, are not the kind of dream that you would need to keep track of and process?
Not usually, no. Not usually. Again, there are exceptions. The repeated dream, yes, but not the nightmare.
So that's usually a different sort of thing altogether.
Yeah, there's also very close to night terror, like walking, sleepwalking, all that. That's not what we're talking about. That's some kind of sleep disturbance that is different from the normal dreaming process. Yeah. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, is walking in your sleep associated with nightmares? Is it normal for people to walk in their sleep?
No, it's a sleep disturbance, and it's a physiological sleep disturbance. And it's nothing terrible, I mean, but it's not too safe, because people have fallen downstairs and such, you know.
What about talking in your sleep?
That's very common. And somewhere I read that it's when your threshold, when your sleep is very shallow and you're already, and you're dreaming, and you're already, when you're speaking, actually activating your voice box. You speak in dreams often without activating your voice box, but when you do that, it's just being closer to being awake. Okay?
Well, what about a dream that you're falling and then you wake up at a start,
mm-hmm.
seemingly at the time that you hit the ground?
Mm-hmm. It's it's almost universal. Everybody has them, and I think it's the terror of what, you know, after you've been falling a long time, you're afraid you would kill yourself, you know. Most people wake up before they land. Yeah. Oh, yes, you had a question.
You indicated that the need for dreaming to, you know, release the psychological release there, and I agree with that. Why is it that a lot of times I feel that if I have a night, that I go through the night and do not have any dreams, or at least I don't remember them, that was a deep sleep and I feel very rested. Whereas if I happen to have a dream, especially if it's a restless or frustrating dream, I wake up feeling very tired and think, oh no, you know, I wish I could have gone through the night and not remembered anything.
Yeah.
Is that in contradiction?
It seems to be, but this whole thing is riddled with paradox. When you have a restless night, it's the restlessness rather than the dreams that cause you feeling badly in the morning. The other one is that you may have had the kind of dream that deals with anxiety. Like, I'll give an example. My daughter got married on a farm. She lives on a farm, and we had to go to another place for the ceremony. And all for weeks before, I dreamt that we were meeting people I know not where to go, I know not where. And I was exhausted in the morning because there was all this tension and anxiety going someplace I didn't know. And that can be tiring. But I think it's the restlessness. We have restless nights where we toss and turn and you're not really sleeping well. Okay? Yeah?
You're on your first.
I've heard most sleeping pills and barbiturates upset the dream pattern too, and they're so harmful.
Yes, that's another very good point. Many sleeping pills put you into a deep sleep to the point where you don't get up to that eye movement sleep and inhibit the dreaming, and therefore you get that sort of disorientation during the day, even though you slept very deeply. Therefore, I think both they are addictive and they should be used only, you know, sparingly or when absolutely necessary. Let's say you've had a, you know, traumatic day or whatever. One or two, even three nights, it won't hurt, but I wouldn't do it all the time.
How about aspirin or buffer? Also do the same thing?
I don't know. I don't think so. I took aspirin when I had a headache and I remembered my dreams really well. Yeah.
How much of the sleep pattern, the dream pattern is disturbed in periods where, I mean, I've had times where I've slept for 4 hours and it feels like I have slept so deep that I've been sleeping for 16. Is the dream period during that time almost completely obliterated, or You know, you're getting just solid, deep sleep? Or is your, have your dreams been so pleasant that you wake up feeling refreshed? You know?
Well, you're asking many different questions. Let's first say, is are you first saying 4 hours of sleep enough to be refreshed? Or is the dream, are you saying, is the dream pattern disturbed?
Yeah, is it, is there a disturbance there?
Well, I don't think so. I think you fall asleep for 1 hour very deeply, and then there's a dream period, and you fall asleep a little less deeply, and then there's another dream period. So you'd have probably two dream periods. I don't know why some people can wake up refreshed after 4 hours.
Well, it doesn't happen to me all the time. No. It's just on occasion. It seems
on occasion,
like it works
yeah.
That way.
Yeah. I've had the same thing happen. I don't think it disturbs the dream pattern. I think you catch up later, several days later. Mm-hmm. There's an amazing thing that's very important to remember, that the psyche is self-healing, given enough time, and that one of the functions of dreams is to be a healing agent. And that when you lose sleep, you'll make up for it. And when you're sick, the body knows better than anything how to heal yourself. That doesn't mean you shouldn't go to a doctor, but that most of the healing takes place within the body, and that there's a balance that it maintains and has an inner wisdom that far exceeds our conscious knowledge. So trust your healing powers within. Yes?
Why do we need to sleep?
Why do we need to sleep? Ha ha. Well, anybody?
No, I'm not efficient as far as time use. And so there has to be a very important reason.
Well, as I said earlier, you weren't in here yet, when I said, especially dreaming. First of all, let's say two reasons. To refresh the body, to restore the mind. You refresh the body in the deep sleep periods where you're almost paralyzed and your heartbeat gets very, very low, and in infants, it's at that time that crib death occurs because that heart isn't efficient yet. It's very, very slow down and your body's totally rested. Then during the dream period, your mind is rested by restoring and reprocessing everything that happened. If you're deprived of sleep, and I'm sure you have been, you become very disoriented. And one of the greatest tortures that people have done in concentration camps is to deprive the prisoners of sleep. Terrible. So even though it seems inefficient, in the long run it seems to be very efficient. And now comes my whole point, that if you use your dreams to listen to your dreams, you are given an additional dimension to your life that you can know in no other way, and it contains a lot of wisdom.
But Jung has you so involved in individuality, he's not going to let you out to look at it. You can't back off and look.
You say Jung has you so involved in individuality
in
that
this.
Yeah, that what?
How do you step back and look? Where do you draw that line?
Well, it's that rear view mirror image again.
Yeah.
You use it wisely. You use it when necessary. You use it when you first wake up. You use it when you go through analysis. You use it in times of stress and perplexity. But 80% of the time, you can go along just fine.
He won't divorce you. He won't divorce that. He don't let you do it.
Oh. Well. Well, I think you should talk to my husband. He thinks that we tend to be too introspective, but there are people who are introverts, and I've talked about that last week, who need this time to look inward, to process, and I think all of us need some of it, but some people need less of it. How's that? But it doesn't prevent you from looking outward at all, really. As I said again, you use your rearview mirror only to look to see if there's any danger. So you look into your dreams to see if there are any warnings. Doesn't take very long. And then you go out. You look perplexed. Or are you just thinking?
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there such a thing as getting too much sleep then? Can you dream too much or anything?
I don't think I can answer that. I think you can stay in bed too long. I think you can escape into sleep when you don't want to face the world, but I don't think you can dream too much. You see? Mm-hmm. You could daydream too much, yeah. Now, daydreaming is very different. That's where you're escaping from facing the world. Paying attention to your dreams is not an escape, but daydreaming is an escape, you see? Lying in bed beyond the time that you need to feel refreshed is also an escape. And many times when people are depressed, they lie in bed for a long time. But depression has its place too. I mean, we can't always be up and doing. But or when you're sick, the body demands more sleep. Yeah. Well, I put some definitions of wholeness on the board. You see, this is for the intellectuals here. Whole, Middle English, healthy, unhurt, and heil, old High German, healthy, unhurt. Wholeness is a process, it is an aim. It is also what Gestalt people talk about, that the psyche is more than the sum of its parts. Analyzing every little bit won't tell you everything about you. We have to look at the whole person. We have to look at the body and the mind, body and the soul. And I'm very strongly in favor of holistic medicine, where healing is looked upon in terms of your emotional side as well as your physical side. And I hate gynecologists who sort of look from here down and see nothing else, because having a baby is a major thing that involves the whole person. And that's a little aside, but wholeness is a process and is really never quite attained. When Fritz Norstadt was speaking last week on healing, he said, sickness is brokenness, but health is fullness rather than wholeness. And I like that a lot. Also, sometimes we're in a good place. We have everything together. And we think, oh, this is great. And we don't like to think of the fact that we must let it fall apart again so we can reach a higher plateau or another plateau. Because growth takes place in a spiral. And you have to go over the same ground over and over again. And again, that's where the dreams can guide you. After you have looked at your dreams for a long time, you'll say, oh my, here's another one of those. You know, another dream that points to this problem. An example. When I was in graduate school, I had a lot of trouble with my thesis, but that's beside the point. Anyhow, for a long time when I was in graduate school, I dreamt of swimming against the stream. It was great difficulty. It was just terribly hard. Then one time I moved around and I swam with the stream, and it was such a wonderful, wonderful feeling. Well, about that same time I met my husband and let that old academic stuff go and so forth, you see. I made a whole U-turn. That didn't mean I rejected the academic, but I was concentrating too much in a direction that at that time I was not right, you know. I needed to get married and have children and all the rest. Any other questions? Well, now let's see. We've talked about individuation and differentiation. Let me give you an example. Before you came to Holden, especially those who haven't been here before, Holden stood for all sorts of things, but it was basically a word. There was no experience to go with it. After your stay at Holden, that same word has a whole lot of experiences to go with it. The word has become differentiated. You follow? So that as you go through life and experience over and over again, now we've been at Holden 10 times and each Holden experience is different and it becomes more and more differentiated. Do you see what I'm saying? So that the process of wholeness is one of becoming more individual and becoming more differentiated, so that you are more aware of more aspects of yourself and of your environment and other people. And all this together is the process of wholeness, for which dreams are the mirror, but a rearview mirror. Okay? Anybody have any dreams that they want to share?
I had a peculiar dream last night. I dreamed a couple of fellows came to me and wanted me to join their barbershop chorus, which I used to sing in, and I was president of the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America Incorporated. And because the group had split up into two different groups, and this one fellow wanted me to join his group. Mm-hmm. But I declined, and I don't remember why. And I told Hazel about that this morning. And I don't know whether I was singing, thinking about whether that would go back. My first thought was about the choir last night, how well they did mm-hmm. with one rehearsal.
And in the dream you say it split and yeah. you were to join the splinter group, was that it?
One of them, yeah. I don't remember which one.
I see. Mm-hmm. There's no reality to that?
No.
No.
No, we're missing the barbershop show at home this week.
Ah, that's where it's at. Just gave the answer.
In fact, last night, it was the 12th.
You see, there it is. Mm-hmm. You were remembering show. That you were missing it. That's where the dream came from. Huh. And part of you wanted to leave Holden, actually, and go and be there.
Well, not that bad.
Not that bad. That's probably what the dream means. That's mm-hmm. lovely. Thank you.
I was interested in some of my dreams because they would be at different, they'd be all together, but they'd be different parts of my life. Mm-hmm. Years ago when I was a girl, and then my family now, and they'd be all as a one story. Like.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, now that's a good dream to begin with. I don't care about the details, but let us say you dream about your girlhood and your time in college and your married life. And depending on where the conflict is, that's where, if you were coming to therapy, we would begin to talk. It would bring up something that needed to be tied in or tied together again, you see? And we always dream of all kinds of parts of our life. And I think your dream is a beautiful example of how unconsciously you were there, but consciously you're here, you see.
I didn't think about it until just now that it was on the 12th.
Yeah.
And yesterday was the 12th.
Right.
Big show. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the unconscious has a wonderful sense of time. It's just amazing. I'm utterly amazed because, as I say, I've kept track of my dreams for 20 years. And as I look back now with hindsight and I know what the end of the story was for this particular thing, I'm just quite amazed at how accurately it would pinpoint things, you know. Without being prophetic, and I might as well talk a little about prophetic. Were you going to ask that?
I was just wondering why so many dreams you wake up before they end. You know, you don't really realize it.
Yeah. Ideally, the dreams have a structure like a play, where there's a sort of the characters are introduced, and there's some kind of climax, and there's a resolution. But you often wake up or are awakened before the resolution. There are theories that people who advocate you're going back to sleep and finishing the dream. They train themselves to do that. I don't like that because I don't like tampering consciously with the dream material. But what you could do is go in for active imagination and start a sort of dialogue with one or two of the characters and see what the end is. What I did, yes?
Oh, well, I just kind of wanted to tell you about an experience I had several years ago. And this may be really obvious what this all meant, and maybe not, so that's why I want to share it. Several years ago, my best girlfriend died when I was about 13 years old. And for nearly a year and a half after that, I had nightmares where I had the same basic outline of the dream. It wasn't exactly the same dream every night, but basically what happened was my girlfriend came back to life and we had a set amount of time together, and then I knew she was going to die again. It was kind of bizarre, and it always had me waking up in tears and a cold sweat, and I'm just wondering what kind of a... Mm-hmm.
Did you have enough time to consciously grieve?
I don't know.
See, I think sometimes when you have a repetitive dream of a person who died and comes back with whom you're together and you wake up, that you haven't processed, that you really didn't give yourself time to grieve. Our culture doesn't like long grief, but the best girlfriend would be about 6 months at which you would really feel very sad. And our culture allows, what, 3 days for mourning, and then you've got to go on with your life. And so your dream was taking over the mourning that you didn't do consciously.
Is there any significance to the set amount of time, do you think, that it seemed there was always like maybe one day? Mm-hmm. Where, in
well, there was the awareness that she had died, and that you were your time was cut off prematurely.
I'll try not to make this too much longer, but I even can remember one dream where I can remember feeling very guilty for her death. Mm. Where I knew that it wasn't my fault, but I felt that I had to hide her death. Mm.
That could also be processing of the grieving, because are you familiar with Kubler-Ross, who wrote on death? Mm-hmm. She says guilt is one of the things. Anger, guilt, depression, those are, that's what everybody feels. No matter what, we always have some reason for feeling guilty. And so I think that could be what it was. Thank you for sharing that.
I had a dream that I feel that, you know, with maybe someone in the prophetic line, I don't know, that actually took place and that is going on now and hasn't ended yet. And it will, I mean, in other words, I'm more or less quite a bit of stock in that dream. I see it as actually having taken place, and I see that it'll be several years down the road before the end of that dream. Mm-hmm. And I see it happening.
Well, maybe you have some gift of ESP, or...
But this particular dream was not a nice one. It was an unhappy dream, and it had to do with one of my children.
I see. But, well, maybe we can talk about it later then.
Yeah, it's real interesting.
We might as well just talk briefly about ESP and prophetic dreams, because we all kind of worry. Sometimes we dream something and it happens, or we see something and we say, oh, this happened before. We don't dream prophetic dreams unless we also have an ESP gift, which I call a gift like musical ability. Then indeed our dreams can be quite prophetic. The fact that dreams are timeless gives them a little overlap, so that they do look forward or backwards beyond what we can see. Also, they're more open to spiritual realities, so that indeed we can plug into this which is timeless. You see, that's another value of dreams and another way of becoming more whole, because we don't want to just live in our little conscious world, which is like the tip of the iceberg. So,
are you saying then that the deja vus that we sometimes experience can tie into dreams?
I think so. Could be. They're kind of perplexing, but they're not. Everybody has them once. They often do tie in with dreams.
I find that with me, though, that deja vus seem to come in waves. There are times when there's long periods of none, and then they seem to happen very quickly, and then they fade out again for a while.
Yeah.
About that.
We have all kinds of rhythms that we don't even begin to be aware of. You know, I really don't know what the answer is on that. Anyone else? Any other questions? Tomorrow I'll be talking, no, on Wednesday I'll be talking about healing symbols and archetypes, but mostly about healing symbols that appear in dreams. And, well, I think I covered most of what I wanted to cover today. See, I'll summarize something again. Yeah?
You touched it, but I'd like to ask this about daydreaming, about the importance of our getting visions and using our creative imagination, all of our goals and objectives should be stimulated by what I think of dreaming and getting a vision of the could be or the should be or what we might become or what we might do. Is there any... They're both words. It's dreaming.
Yeah, daydreaming, however, can be an escape. Some of it can be kind of constructive, where you will say, well, let me imagine what would happen if I became a symphony conductor, and then you imagine what it would be like, or let me imagine what it would be if I were an athletic Olympic champion, and you sort of spin it all out, and you think of all those possibilities. But often, daydreaming is an escape from reality.
Wasn't this a dream of Preeb, Wes? See?
Yeah, that's a difference. A dream, we use the same word. English is such a strange language. It has only a few words for everything. I'm prejudiced because I speak German and French. His dream of Holden was, what's the word I'm looking for?
Vision.
A vision.
Vision.
Yeah, or he envisioned what it could be like, or he was able to see the possibility. But it's not the dreams we're talking about.
Those are the kinds of dreams you should pay attention to, too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And those are the kinds that in people who are very intuitive can see possibilities and then find ways of making that a reality. Yeah, that's very nice. Well, let's see. What time is it? Yeah, well, we still have 15 minutes, but if you need to go, it's fine. Yes?
Well, I had a question. I know I have dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to remember one of the things I've done. At one point, I would wake myself up and write down immediately my dreams. Oh, I've gotten away from that. Another thing I've tried is just before I wake up, I can sort of realize I'm waking up and that I've had a dream, and I will remember the dream, and I will repeat the dream to myself.
That's
but
the way to do it.
When I wake up fully, I can't remember the dream,
oh.
Although I can remember having had a dream, but I can't remember anything about it. Even, and sometimes I will try to make myself remember a key word that I think will help me to remember the dream, but it doesn't usually work. And I wondered why I can't remember my dreams. Some people have said that maybe that I repress my dreams or something, which I don't really believe.
No. Well, maybe we could talk about that later, too, because you're doing the right thing. I don't understand why.
I just wondered why some people can remember their whole dream. It seems like
well, there are differences in closeness to the unconscious, but you seem to be doing the right thing, and I don't, if you repeat the dream to yourself or remember a key word, why you don't remember it when you wake up? Well, maybe we could talk about that later.
You mentioned how quickly a person wakes up makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I can sure see that. Ruth wakes up so slowly, and she just comes to life gradually, and she remembers those dreams. You know, and I'm always just jumped out of bed.
Yeah. There are differences in the quickness of awakeness, of awakening.
Yeah.
So practice makes perfect if you try to work on this.
Yeah.
It's better.
But there are still, maybe there are also physiological differences of how quickly a person wakes up.
Yeah.
I wake up very slowly.
But
too.
I mean trying.
Yeah. Oh, trying helps.
At it
yeah.
Would help.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
When you said that dreams, in a dream state, you are more open to spiritual realities. Okay, I assume that's where it talks in with, or ties in with dreams—a way to listen to God.
Yes.
What about spiritual realities which are not so wonderful?
Well, remember the epistle yesterday. We're dealing that with principalities and powers of darkness.
Yeah.
That is the danger. Dark forces speak, come through too, and hook into your own shadow. And that's where dark dreams, nightmares, all that come from, in part. I'm not a theologian, so I can't speak to that too well, but Lisa, do you have anything to say about the dark forces that can speak to you?
No, there is a fine book that I imagine you're aware of too, up in the bookstore. It's called Living With Your Shadow, or I forget the exact title, but the word shadow is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Clinical, theological, and interesting old book that would deal with that, I think.
Yeah.
You touched on it, but Mm-hmm. Dreaming of our potential, dreaming of our gifts, dreaming of us, where we have a feeling of inadequacy or where we have a feeling of not doing the things that we would like to do.
Yes. Well, that's where I mentioned Mary Schramm's books, Gifts of Grace. I think you'll find it very helpful. It deals with all those aspects, and it says how you can recognize your gifts and how you can finally utilize them. She gives wonderful examples, very humorous. And that, yes, we feel that we're not. If we feel uncomfortable, and that's one of the sure signs when we feel either pressure or discomfort, then we are lacking something. Now, unfortunately, in the world, we have to do a lot of things we don't like to do in order to earn our living. But at least then in our leisure time, we should be living out our gifts, you see. And again, I say that those people who can get paid for that which they really like to do, or live in such a way, in such a simplified life, that they can do with less, which is part of our whole theme and lifestyle, they really will live to the fullest.
But I think there are many people who have talents that are never uncovered.
Alas, you're so right.
And how can we go about uncovering these things?
Read Mary Schramm's book.
Yeah. Well, I've heard her talk.
Yeah.
And I'm very impressed by her talks.
Yeah.
On
she calls it.
And I've had an experience myself in the last couple of years. I don't consider myself an artist at all. But I've been very interested in church banners. And I started making banners for my church. And I've made some beautiful banners. I still consider myself not talented in art, and I have no confidence in my ability to design a banner. But I've never had so much joy in service as I've had in making the banners.
And that is the key to joy in service, and that's where Mary Schramm speaks so eloquently, that if we can get our people to serve with joy and doing that which gives them pleasure, their gift is so much more valuable. And alas, we call artists, it's an intimidating title. And we think of, you know, the great big artists who paint paintings. But making a church banner is a very creative, artistic endeavor. So apparently you discovered or tapped something that you didn't know you had.
But I have someone helping me, and they'll say, but you're gifted, you know. Yeah. And I say, no, I've discovered that I can make banners without being gifted.
Did you make the ones in the Carnoniana?
No.
You've seen those?
No.
Nice. Anyone, what are those banners, Elizabeth? The gifts of the Spirit?
Gifts of the Spirit. Yeah.
The reason I know this is that I gave a talk last year on it. That's how I noticed.
Yeah,
they're rather lovely.
The Beatitudes gives us the assurance, you are the light of the world, the salt of the earth, but we say, who, me? I'm not that.
We always put our light under a bushel. Yeah. I think we're masters at putting our light under a bushel. And what happens when you do that, you know? You can even snuff out the light. There's a very beautiful story in this book where the little boy comes to school and the teacher says, today we're going to paint. Oh boy, he's happy. Today we're going to paint flowers. And he's getting out his crayon. He said, no, wait a minute, I must tell you how to do it. You make a green stem and you make a red flower. And all the children made flowers, green stem and red flowers. And the little boy did what the teacher told him and lived in that school, and it was okay. But then they were transferred and he got into an open school. The teacher said, today we're going to draw flowers. And that's all she said. And the little boy drew a flower, a green stem and a red thing. He knew nothing else. And she said, "I'm not, you know, you can do anything you want," but he could only think of that one possibility. Mm-hmm. So it can be squelched.
Mm-hmm. That's a song by Harry Chapin.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I personally don't think that it's permanently squelched. If you get a child fairly young, if this goes on for a lifetime, I suppose it happens. But I'm optimistic. Let's say that you've been squelched for the better part of your life. If you go through a therapy, that's what therapy is all about. And we just take all the garbage away and let the light shine. And most of us have heaped an awful lot of garbage on our inner light.
I think probably all it takes is being getting squelched when you're very young, because they say that those are the very most formative years.
Yes.
And if you're squelched, then it's going to be rougher.
Yes.
To be able to open up your creativity.
Yeah, well, that's when you need therapy. But I do therapy, and I've seen it open up.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite amazing, and it can happen very suddenly too.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in suffering or depression, that's sort of like a muffled cry for help. And at that point, you should seek a friend or a therapist to help you uncover some of that garbage. And all of us have some of it. I don't think any of us are totally free.
But we're not using enough of the talents of our people in our Lutheran churches.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We keep working with this thing going home from hold, and my sister is struggling with talents. But here we have people who can preserve the culture of America, and we're not using them. We had a man die recently who helped us build our church, and we haven't gotten to his wife to get her to come in and teach our children how to weave and card or make soap or make candles. And yet they had lived out on that ranch the way they had lived for generations.
Oh, honey.
And she has it all. You go out there, it's the historical home. The original log cabin is at the back of their house. And she has a basement full of canned goods, just the way they've been doing it for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not using her. We're letting her sit there in her sorrow instead of getting her in and having her work with our people and pass on the history of America. It's right there.
Well,
if you were in New England, she'd be exploited. But down in our little hill in Texas, we haven't reached
her. Oh, it's in Texas.
We're failing.
Wow.
We have reached a lot of our people, but not these people who have problems who need to be reached.
That goes in with using all the parts of the body of Christ. My honest opinion is, and this is from my experience in Lutheran churches are not set up to do that. Too many people are depending on the pastor and the committees and the organizations that are there and not utilizing the body of Christ. And a body like that withers and dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You had a question.
Yeah, I have a question about depression. I went through some fairly severe depressions where it seemed as though I had no dreams at all, and I felt so terrible, and I wondered why I wasn't having nightmares. There was just such a blank inside, and time felt totally wasted.
Amen.
I wasn't working on anything for weeks.
Well,
was I just totally repressing?
Well, depression is probably the most prevalent illness in our society, and the one that is almost most maligned. Everybody says to you, get up and do something. They'll nudge you in this and that. Our approach tends to be, what is it you have to learn from your depression? Why is it that what has happened preceding the depression to bring you to this point where you're unresponsive, unable to move? That's all, undecided, that's one of the signs, indecision. And when it feels like you're dead inside, as though there's no response. You know, when you pluck a guitar, there's this resonating chamber. And when you're depressed, it's as though the resonating chamber, there was no resonating chamber, that nothing can bring you to life. And two things that can be done is, one, to just live it through and keep the confidence and pray, of course, because God is very close to you in depressions. The other one, which is again an image that our priest gave us, he said, when you build a tall building, you need a very deep basement, a foundation. And the depression is often the foundation for tremendous growth. So that gives you a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm.